This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Episode 237. What Did You Watch This Week? My name is Mike.
And my name is John.
How's it going?
It's going pretty well. I want to jump in with something here real quick because it's kind of news related, but basically over the past week or so, we've had two very high profile deaths in Celebrityville. Now, I saw a meme the other day that was a bit of a thinker, and it made me laugh so loud. And I almost sent it to you, and I thought, no, I got to hold off. But it was basically, it said, that feeling you get when you beat your rival to the pearly gates. And it was Daryl Hammond as Sean Connery saying, suck it, Trebek. Exactly. I was just like, oh, he did too by a couple of days.
that's funny. Sad funny. Yep. But yeah, we lost Alex Trebek and Sean Connery.
Yep. And
they're both up there.
Yeah. Sean Connery was 90 and he had been sick for a little while. Alex Trebek was 80. He had that prostate cancer that, you know, he was very positive about it, but
I don't think I realized Sean Connery was 90 years old, quite frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought he was 90 back in Highlander. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah, like, well, he's one of, like, Leslie Nielsen. You know, he's looked the same for so long, like, for us, that is. Like,
true.
I mean, if you get down to it, he did look older, but still, I mean, he didn't, you know.
There are some of those people who just, like, they hit 40 or so and they look like an older guy, but then they just, it's like they crystallize like that, like they never look ancient.
Like, I didn't realize this, but he hadn't done a movie in 8 years.
I thought it was longer than that.
Well, he did a cartoon, I guess. So the last movie he did where he had like a starring role in it was A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen in 2003.
Jesus.
He was excellent in that, but I didn't realize it had been 17 years since the man had been in a movie.
Damn. Huh. Well, good for him. I mean, that would have put him at what? 73? Jesus. Huh.
I mean, I haven't really looked about it. I mean, you think of Sean Connery, we all know he's been in stuff. I mean, he was James Bond, for crying out loud, but I guess if you really get down to it, other than he did the voice, and was an executive producer of this animated movie called Sir Billy, which I'd never heard of.
Me either.
Sir Billy, also known as Guardian of the Highlands, is a 2012 Scottish computer animated adventure comedy with Sean Connery, Alan Cumming, Patrick Doyle, and Kieran Elliott.
Ooh, nice. That's a nice cast.
Huh. But yeah, prior to that, I mean, you're looking at League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Finding Forrester, Entrapment, Playing by Heart, The Avengers, The Rock, Dragonheart, First Night, Just Cause. You and I have both seen every single one of these movies.
Yes, we have. Some of them we've seen together.
Well, yeah, a lot of them we've actually seen together, yeah. But like... A Good Man in Africa, Rising Sun, Medicine Man, Robin Hood, Men in Tights, Highlander 2, The Quickening, The Russian House, The Hunt for an October. Like, he's been in a lot of pretty awesome films. So.
Yes, he has.
Anyhow. But, yeah. So, I guess let's about
some shows?
Some stuff, yeah.
I got to tell you, I was surprised at the number of things that I was able to watch this week between very uncharacteristically of me. I actually spent a lot of time with like CNN or MSNBC on in the background because
I watched the election stuff a lot myself.
Yeah.
Same, which is unusual for me.
Yeah, neither one of us is very political when it comes to that kind of stuff, but holy crap. Not at all. This was something to watch because it made a big difference.
Yeah, it really did. And I was actually surprised how much I watched it, how much I got into it, I guess, how much it meant to me, if you will. I was genuinely surprised.
Yeah, I had a few friends who, you know, were messaging me and, you know, it was different stages of it, but like I had a couple of them who were just like really upset from the beginning. They're like, oh my god, a couple of them who were just like, no, I'm not even getting my hopes up, I'm not going to think about this. And so it was a combination of like commiserating with them and also like trying to boost them up and be like, oh, it's going to be okay, you know, look, the numbers are coming up in Georgia, look, the numbers are coming up in Pennsylvania. And so yeah, it was a very intense week for that kind of stuff. So I was shocked when I looked at my list and I'm like, holy crap, I did watch a lot of stuff.
I think I would not have watched as much as I did had it not been for the fact that I work from home every day.
That's a good point.
If I had been in the office like normal, I definitely would not have watched as much as I was able to watch. Plain and simple. Right.
Makes sense. I mean, you can't really watch it in the office, but when you're working from home, nobody's looking over your shoulder to see what you got on the background.
Yeah, and I just kind of usually have it sitting there on my tablet next to me, you know, not that I'm really watching it.
Right.
Excuse me. Wow. But anyhow.
So let's jump into some shows.
Well, you know, I told you we had to start late tonight because I somehow forgot to watch Truth Seekers. Like, I knew I needed to watch it. I can only watch it on Amazon, which is on my TV, and I just completely blanked it this weekend. Last Friday, I was like, I need to watch it tonight, and then I blanked it. And Saturday night, I had the pay-per-view, which took up a lot of my time.
Yeah.
But Truth Seekers, I really enjoy the hell out of this show.
Yeah, like the first episode was good. This one was even better.
Yeah, they go to the Portland Beacon, which is this haunted place, and the number station where the guy's reading the numbers on the radio, the 1579 over and over and over again. We go back to a World War II flashback where this guy is, he has to jam the frequencies for the Nazis so they can't bomb them. And like the tower gets struck by lightning and his soul gets sucked into the machine.
This was like an X-Files kind of thing. It was just great.
Yeah, and his soul gets sucked into the machine, and that's why for the last, you know, 70 years or whatever, he's been reading the numbers off, and he has to jam the frequency for the Nazis, and also what he's doing is he's jamming the Wi-Fi once the Wi-Fi router was installed.
Right. And I love how they got him to move on, and simultaneously how easy it was, but also how, like, heartfelt.
Yeah, the show, because it's only a half hour long, is a little bit of what's that term, Mary Sue, with how they discover things, fix things, and everything so quickly.
Yes.
Elton John's got something he's hiding.
Yes. It took me a second because I forgot that his name is Elton John, but yes.
Yeah, he's hiding something because he, Nick's character, Nick Frost's character there, Gus, he's like, I did a search on you. I can't find anything. And he's like, oh, I'm not really on social media. And he lied to Nick about where he's from. And then he tells Gus about where he's from. But then he tells the soldier in the computer, you know, now that he's from this other town. And, you know, Gus calls him out on it. And
he's also, we got alluded to in the first episode that he never keeps a job long. Yeah. We found out his sister is extremely agoraphobic.
Yes.
And he's living with her.
Yep.
Yeah, he's definitely got some. And we were almost led to believe that he could like see ghosts because, you know, he saw the caretaker and they were like, there's no caretaker here. Oh, wait, you mean this guy? Yeah, he's right over there. Oh, okay.
Yes.
So like,
I thought that was funny.
But he definitely seems to have like, yeah, you're right. Something there. Something's not quite right. But then we've also got that girl who stowed away in their van last time.
Yeah.
And she is like hunting around Gus's apartment and, you know, his dad's there and she's like poking around her stuff, but she sees ghosts everywhere. Like they're all over the place
in his house and around his house and everything else.
Yeah. I can't tell if they can actually like interact with her. It doesn't seem like they see her the way that she sees them. But she's very scared of them.
She is very much afraid of them.
So I can't wait for that because I have a feeling like I don't think Gus is going to be jealous that she can see ghosts. I think he's going to think that it's awesome.
You think so? Oh, yeah. No, Gus. I'm sorry. I was thinking Elton John. Because Elton John doesn't have anything to do with ghosts. But yeah, no, Gus, I think, is going to think it's excellent that she can see ghosts.
Yeah, he's not like going to be jealous or anything. He's going to be like, oh, my God, this is great. You got to tell me what you're looking at.
I like how we see Gus talking to his dad, telling him to stay out of his den and stop touching his stuff. And he's like, I don't touch your stuff. Really? Then why is it always moved around? Maybe it's the ghost. And he walks off. And then later we see him go in his den, touch his stuff, move stuff around on purpose, basically, like, in spite of Gus.
Yep.
And he seems to move around a lot easier than he lets on.
Yes. Yes, he does.
Like when he's Gus even like there.
He's even like trying to chat with women and stuff online. And
yeah. And he seems a lot more mobile than he lets on when Gus, you know, when Gus is gone. So no, I think it's a fun show. I really don't know where it's going otherwise. Cause we haven't, it's not like we've had only a very slight storyline. From the first episode to the second, but they've been really kind of a couple standalone stories, but we only have 8 episodes, so we only got 6 more to go.
Now, I had a question for you.
Sure.
Simon Pegg's character sent them out there to fix that problem, and then at the end, he's looking at that map with like how the Wi-Fi and the signal was blocked out, and then he sees it come back online, and he's like, oh, good. Did you get the sense that that was something more than just like, oh, the job is done? Like there was something a bit more insidious about it?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think there's something bigger going on with him. Like the cable company is a front or something.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Absolutely. I think so. Yeah, Smile is, there's definitely something more nefarious going on.
Any company that's called Smile.
Right, and well, that we're straight away as suspect, yeah. Based on that alone.
Absolutely. So what else you got?
Well, Cobra Kai was solid. It opens up with Johnny making everyone do burpees till someone confesses who wrecked Miyagi-Do. Nobody does. Eventually, Hawk goes to Kreese and says, I should tell everyone I did it. And Kreese goes, no, don't do that. I'll take care of it. Don't worry. And then Johnny's got to go because he gets a phone call. I'll let you talk about that side of the house.
Okay.
Also, we see, as we fast forward, we see they're still kind of doing burpees. And basically, Kreese says, hey, Hawk's responsible for it, and so isn't Miguel, and so isn't this person, so isn't you, and so isn't. Because basically says, if you're a member of Cobra Kai, you are responsible. So he initially makes it look like he's throwing Hawk under the bus after he tells him not to say anything, but then he's basically saying, no, we all did this. Let's take a break. He lets him even have a water break, which is odd, in my opinion. But then they get to doing some full contact sparring, and even after scoring a point, you know, Kreese wants them to basically deliver a death blow. Miguel basically says to Kreese, that's not how Sensei Lawrence wants us to do things. You know, he says to show no mercy. However, there's no honor in attacking someone when they're down, basically.
Right.
So Kreese kind of gets uppity. But then Miguel does later on apologize to him, and Kreese accepts his apology and says that together they can bring Sensei Lawrence back on the right path. Over at Miyagi-Do, a bunch of the guys show up there. And, of course, there's a lesson to be learned. There's a big rock they can't lift. And, you know, the way Dimitri talks to people, he deserves an ass-whooping from everybody. Because he talks so condescendingly like, down to every single person he talks to.
Yeah.
I got none of that, John.
Legitimate.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, we're recording remotely from each other, and Skype isn't being very agreeable with us tonight.
Yeah, Skype's giving us some headaches, but can you hear me okay now?
I can.
Okay.
I said Dimitri deserves an ass whooping, and then you were saying...
I was basically saying that, yeah, I don't know if it's Asperger's or what, but this kid is a bit of a dick. Like,
yeah.
He's one of those, oh, well, I'm just being honest. You're not being honest. You're being a dick. It's
yeah.
Just shy of being a bully, but it's still like, I don't know. And I get that he was pissed because, you know, this is the guy who beat him up like the day before.
Yeah, he was with Cobra Kai when they went and tried to beat up Dimitri at the ball.
Right.
And so, yeah, I get why Dimitri is upset. But even when they worked together at the end to, you know, may use a fulcrum and lift this giant rock, like, Dimitri's still a fucking asshole. And it's like, Dimitri's a type to run up to someone bigger than him, tell him that they're a stupid blockhead, nana nana boo boo, stick here and doo doo, I'm better than you, then gets his ass kicked and go, what? What did I do? Why'd you do that? Well, because you're an asshole. That's why. So, Johnny heads off.
Johnny gets a phone call and heads off. This was one of the coolest parts of this episode. Like, I sent you a message that said this was the best episode of Cobra Kai yet. And I had just finished watching it. Yep. It was partly because of, you know, what was going on there and Daniel finally getting like a legitimate Miyagi style lesson in to his students. But a lot of it, and we're starting to see Kreese really show his colors. A lot of it though was the fact that not only, okay, Johnny had to go to the hospital because Tommy was not doing well. And Tommy was one of the Cobra Kai when Johnny was there. So he meets up with Bobby and Jimmy, which now that you look back on it, and I looked it up, these are all the original actors from that movie. Now that you look back on it, you're like, why were they all Y names? Jimmy, Tommy, Bobby, Johnny. Like, what the hell 80s. Was going on?
Well, look at all the comic book characters, like Peter Parker, Lois Lane.
Yeah. Dr. Doom, Fang Foom. So, basically, Tommy is dying. Like, he's in a hospital bed, and he is dying, and, you know, there's nothing that can change that. He's palliative care, you know, they're taking care of him as best as they can, but he knows that he's on his way out, and so the guys are up there to basically say their goodbyes, you know, their one last, hey, man, you know, we're family, we'll miss you. And basically, Bobby and Jimmy tell Johnny, they're like, hey, look, we looked into it. He can check himself out for 24 hours. Let's take him on a road trip. So the four of them get on motorcycles and they head to the lake up north and they kind of reminisce and they talk about the old days. And Johnny tells them that he's got Cobra Kai up and running again. And all of them are like, are you fucking kidding me? Why would you do that? That's so bad. That's stupid. That was terrible, blah, blah, blah. And then he doubles down. Instead of being like, you know, oh, no, I can do it right this time. He starts to, and then he's like, and Kreese is on board. And they're like, are you fucking kidding? And basically, like, Bobby's a priest now. And he is like, you know, Johnny says to him, aren't you supposed to have forgiveness? And he's like, yeah, but there are some things. I mean, come on. So basically, they all tell him he's an idiot for doing this. And then they camp out overnight and he kind of has a heart to heart with Tommy. And Tommy tells him that, you know, he was in love with Allie. And he was about to make a move when Johnny made the move. And so that's why he joined Cobra Kai, was to basically not be a pussy anymore. And it was touching. And then, you know, as you can expect, Tommy passes away in the night. So now Johnny and his friends have to deal with that. But it was a very touching thing. Again, it was really cool to see that they got the original actors. They all look a lot older. They were all bald, which was interesting.
Except for Johnny. Johnny looked the best of all of them.
He really did.
Like, nobody else aged well, it seemed like.
That's pretty much it, yep. So Johnny, you know, again, we're humanizing Johnny a lot more. And, of course, while they're in the bar and they're talking about Cobra Kai being a bad thing, they accidentally get into a fight, you know, spill a drink, and somebody wants to pick a fight. So they kick some ass, Cobra Kai style, old school, you know. And you could definitely tell, again, that William Zabka, who plays Johnny, has been practicing and training. And the other ones, it was like, okay, well, they jobbered it a bit, essentially.
Yeah. Did you mention, because, again, we're cutting out a little bit here, but did you mention that Daniel talked about he actually joined Cobra Kai?
I did not, but I really liked that fact.
Yes, when they were telling them that people from can join, you know, people that were formerly in Cobra Kai, they can change. Oh, how do you know, or whatever? And he's like, because I was in Cobra Kai. And he talked about his falling out with Mr. Miyagi and how he joined Cobra Kai and how we got the wrong attitude. I had completely forgotten about that. You know, quite frankly, I think I need to go back and watch, like, Karate Kid Part 2 and 3.
Yep. Yep, you know? I had the same reaction. I was like, he was never in Cobra Kai. Are they going to, like, try to retcon it and say that he joined Cobra Kai before he met Mr. Miyagi? And I had forgotten about Silver and all that shit. And so watching him do that, I'm like, oh, that's right.
Yeah. So I feel like I need to go back in time and rewatch.
It all started coming just flooding back when they had those flashbacks, you know, how basically Kreese told Silver, he's like, I want you to make his hands bleed. So, you know, Silver had him like breaking boards over and over again until his knuckles bled. And, you know, he injured his leg by trying to break the legs of the dummy there. Yeah. Good stuff.
Excuse me. Very good stuff.
It's a great show.
Keeping with the half hour situational comedies. I know that's how a Cobra Kai is, but keeping with a half hour show, start a new show last week. I completely forgot to talk about, and you had watched it previously. It comes back this Thursday night on CBS, The Unicorn.
The Unicorn, Walton Goggins.
This is phenomenal. First season is 18 episodes. It's basically about a guy, Walter Goggins, who, when we pick up, his wife has passed away from cancer, I believe it was. She'd been gone about a year. And it's just him and his two daughters. And he basically is encouraged by his friends to kind of go back into the dating scene. And because he has a job, he's a widower, not divorced, and he's a devoted father, every girl wants to meet him and go on a date with him because he's a unicorn, as in he's a mythical being.
Don't forget, his wife was the only woman that he was ever with.
That's so true. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So he's just like, he is perfect in people's eyes.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I got to say, as a guy who had been with his wife since he was 17 and got divorced at 32 and then started to date then, girls were exceptionally fascinated by the fact that I was 32 and only been with one person, essentially. Like, they just couldn't get over it. And I never asked them, but they would always ask me, because we'd have a conversation, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But.
And, yeah, it's probably good that you didn't ask them back, because you could have gotten everything from a "I'm not going to tell" to something you didn't want to hear. Or
I'm not going to lie, I never, I never asked them first, but if they would ask me and then make a big deal out of it, I go, why? What's your number then? You know what I mean? Because in my mind, I'm like, if they're like making a huge deal out of this, then that number's got to be pretty big.
Right.
And then,
right.
You know, someone's like, oh, I'm embarrassed to say. Well, then you don't have to say, you know.
But just know I'm judging you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, 32. And
I saw 32 dicks.
I went in a row and they were like, what? No. And I was like, oh, okay. Because, you know, Clerks, the 37, 36, I'm 36, 37, 37. You know, blah, 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 blah. My girlfriend saw 37 dicks in a row.
In a row?
And then, okay, why would you chase her down and scream at her, trying to suck any dick while you're walking through the parking lot? Like, even if you're mad at your girlfriend, you shouldn't yell that at her.
Dante was not thinking straight at the time, I'm pretty sure.
I like it when the guy walks off. Hey, get back here.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
So Clerks. You're enjoying the unicorn.
Yeah, I watched the whole first season already. I binged through it the last couple of weeks. And great cast. It was driving me crazy because I couldn't figure out the friends out in his life. Because there's these two other couples and they all have kids. There's one couple, they have one daughter. And it's Cuddy. Isn't that Cuddy from House?
No, no. It's somebody who is similar to Cuddy, but that is not Cuddy.
Okay. I thought it was. But you have Rob Corddry as one of his friends and mm-hmm. Della's husband, Michaela Watkins. What is she from? Trophy Wife, Saturday Night Live, whatever. She's a pediatrician. I think she's hilarious, but she's like everybody's mom. And then you have his other friend, Omar Miller, who plays Ben. And then his wife, Michelle, who I absolutely love, Maya Lynn Robinson. I think she's a stay-at-home mom. They have four kids. This group just works so well together because they couldn't be more different, but yet they're all great friends and they're all helping him through this and they're all helping him with his kids. And it's just funny how all these people have interacted in each other's lives as far as like, you know, they do sports together and this, and they go out to dinner together and they go to each other's houses and, hey, can you pick up my kids? And they call each other all the time and they're dependent on each other to survive and get through life. Mm-hmm. But they don't fucking tell us why or how they're friends or how they know each other. Are they related? Are they family? Like, it drove me fucking crazy. I had to wait because I'm watching. So I'm like, but I just want to know why they're friends. And we don't even find out until fucking episode 8, finally. The mm-hmm. 8th episode in where they're at Thanksgiving and Wade finally talks about how they all met. And it's just like, you couldn't have done that in the first episode.
Right.
But yeah, I love the show. I think it's fantastic, and I'm so excited.
Through the first season, right?
I'm all done the first season, and I was pumped as fucking shit when the end of the first season. It's, you know, his wife's birthday, his deceased wife's birthday, and they're having their day, and he goes to the cemetery to sit and talk to his wife and say goodbye to her. And you think the episode's over, and then all of a sudden, there's Natalie Z, and I'm just, or Zia, however you pronounce it, and I'm just like, ooh.
Yep.
Like, I'm so excited because I'm like, that's got to be the girl that he falls in love with finally, because he's dated so many people in this first season, because that's what it's about. He's back out dating.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm pretty excited.
One of my favorite parts of that series was the episode where we had the realization that Rob Corddry's character, completely inexplicable, has the best fashion sense. Like the way that he's picking out outfits for the girls. And he's just like, no, give me a floral print with that. And they're like, oh my God, he's right. It works. And like everybody is just shocked that he has this kind of fashion sense. He's like, why are you shocked? Look at the way that I dress.
No, he didn't even say that. They were shocked. And then finally the oldest daughter is just like, wait, look at him.
Oh,
he's dressed. He dressed so impeccably immaculate. You know, but I thought it was funny. We can go sit on the dad bench. What's the dad bench? What's the bench over there where the dad sit? He goes and sits down. And he's like, hey, how about those Trojans or whatever sports team they're talking about? And he tries and he goes, you know, they're just not for me.
Yeah. I love it.
No, it's a fun show. Yeah. So, and then it comes back this Thursday the 12th. Yeah. This Thursday the 12th. The title, the name of the episode is There's Something About Whoever She Was.
Awesome.
But yeah. No, I apparently I enjoy shows that have a big gaggle of friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. Scrubs, How I Met Your Mother.
Happy Endings.
Happy Endings. Kate's been watching the hell out of New Girl, so I've been catching that here and there. Yeah, apparently I enjoy shows that have a big gaggle of friends for half
and yet hour. You're not that big of a Friends fan.
Yeah, I never was when it was first on. Maybe that was the rebel in me is like, I'm not gonna like the show everybody else likes. But I will say that now that Kate, she watches it like 3 times a year, the whole fucking series. I end up catching episodes here and there with her, and I am starting to appreciate it.
Well, that's good.
I'm appreciating the show like the girl, like Jennifer Aniston and Courtney Cox appreciated not wearing bras, apparently, on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the show is actually pretty racy. Maybe it wasn't racy for 1990s when it was on, or 2000s, whatever it was, but the show is actually a pretty racy show.
Hmm. Interesting.
Almost every episode is them talking about sex or having sex or wanting to have sex or who they're going to have sex with.
Interesting.
Anyhow, what do you got?
Well, actually, I watched a new show this week. Popped up on Amazon, and it sold me because it said from the demented minds behind Deadpool. And I was like, well, then I should check this out. It's very interesting. And I'm going to tell you to check it out. Okay. I'm going to give you a little bit on it. It's a 34-minute show for the first episode. It's called Wayne, W-A-Y-N-E. The description says that he is a 16-year-old Dirty Harry. Okay? And it doesn't go beyond that part. Like, it talks about how he's basically going to Florida with his girlfriend, Del. It's a very interesting show, and it took me a little bit. Like, it wasn't from the first scene that I was like, oh, this is good. Like, the opening scene is quite weird.
So this was a YouTube premium show. It was canceled after one season.
Okay. Well, it's on Amazon now. I would check it out, though.
Amazon or Hulu?
Amazon. That's where I saw it.
Okay, I thought you said Hulu. Sorry.
It was very interesting. Basically, the whole he's a Dirty Harry thing is he has a bad attitude. Like, if he sees injustice happening, then he goes after the people. But he's a 16-year-old, so it's like in school or, you know, with people in his direct life. He's not a cop with a vendetta. He doesn't have a gun. And he's not afraid to take a pounding either. So, but yeah, it was... Like, by the end of the first episode, I was like, I kind of want to see more of this. So, yeah, I'm going to give it not a hard sell, but I think you should check out the first episode and let me know what you think.
Okay, will do. On Amazon now, you said. Okay, I'll check it out. Cool.
Now, last week, we forgot to talk about Staged.
Okay, yes.
So we've got a couple episodes to talk about.
Yeah, this is a fun show, isn't it?
It is. It is. Considering it all takes place like remotely, you know. The third episode got me laughing a lot.
The one that's called Who the Fuck is Michael Sheen?
Yes. Now, have you noticed, by the way, that they change subtle things in the end credits? Based on the previous episodes, like now you'll see that when they show the characters' names at the end of the episode, it's Michael Sheen and David McDonald.
Yeah.
Because of the whole thing where David Tennant said that his real name is McDonald and he wants to, maybe he'll write under David McDonald and they're like, ooh, you know, a thriller by David McDonald.
Well, yes, but the whole point of that was it was at the end of episode 2. And Michael, she was like, oh, that's fantastic. Yes, I love it. I love it. He goes, and then David Tay goes, you know what that means, don't you? What? No. And you see the screen move around. So now David Tennant's on the left and Michael Sheen's on the right. And now David Tennant has top billing.
Yep.
Because McDonald's is before Sheen.
Yep. And then they continue it, like, in the end of the third episode, it's still up there as David McDonald.
Yeah, I love it. No, yeah, I did see that. I thought that was absolutely hilarious. And I just like how they move the screens around, you know, their screens and swap them.
So the second episode, because I watched this like week before, I'm trying to remember which one this one was.
It's the one where he puts essentially the story. Well, not the story, but Michael Sheen puts. Basically, Michael Sheen's like, yeah, apparently I've been drinking way more than I thought. So I put all my empty recyclables in my neighbor's bin. So that way they won't think it's me drinking all the alcohol. And David Tennant tries to tattle on his wife to him, and Michael Sheen's wife is basically like, "What? Would you rather we didn't recycle at all, David?"
And yeah, then the episode ends with like, back, "Oh, you know."
Yeah, and then the episode ends with like, "Oh, my neighbor's here. She found the bottle. She's pissed. I gotta go."
And then they continue it in the third episode. Because he basically says he has to go return some library books because he's now doing all of her chores because she actually has him on video. She has like a security camera and she's got him on video doing this. So she's blackmailing him.
Yep.
It's fucking hilarious. But apparently when they first were going to do this play before COVID hit, they had Sam Jackson attached to it. And now that they're doing it remotely, they're not going to use Sam Jackson. And so David has to deliver the news to him. And basically, David is a coward and tells him that, like, it was up to the producer and she didn't like him. And he's like, you know, don't call her. Don't talk to her. Just, you know, we have to do it with this Michael Sheen guy. He's a real asshole. I hate him. But, you know, we've got to do it with him. And then, of course, to Michael Sheen, he's like, oh, yeah, you know, I told Sam that, you know, It sucks to be him, but, you know, he's out. I told him, I really want to do it with you. This all seems fine, and he thinks he's a genius until he gets a call from Sam Jackson. And Sam's just like, so I talked to Joe, and I basically, you know, so you really want to do this with me? And David's like, oh, yeah, I want to do it with you. I don't want to do it with Michael. He's an asshole. He's pretentious, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, Michael's on the other line listening to the whole thing. And it's just farcical. Like, I loved watching the facial reactions because, you know, the whole thing is staged, as the show says. But it's still funny to watch them because they're very good actors. You know, him sit there and be like, you know, oh, fuck. And he literally hangs up on Sam Jackson.
Like, I think that's my favorite part is when he hangs up on Sam Jackson and then calls Michael Sheen and then says the same thing to Michael Sheen.
The exact same thing. And I actually wrote it down because, like, he sits there and runs Sam into the ground and Sam's like, hey, David. And David Tennant goes, yeah, I should have seen that coming, huh?
Yep,
it was so brilliantly delivered. Like, he's just running his mouth to each of them about the other one, and they're both listening to the whole thing. Like, what the fuck was he thinking? Oh, I like this show.
Oh, I do too. I like
it's fun.
Fun. Yeah, it is fun. All right. Let's see here. What else?
Superstore? If we're going with the half-hour comedies?
Yeah. So Superstore. This episode still great. Still on board with it. It's Amy's official last day. Her and Joan, of course, break up.
Yep. Because she's neurotic. Like, Jonah's the neurotic one, yet she's more neurotic somehow.
Yeah. Somehow she is. Well, she's freaking out because her ring's missing. So she thinks that Jonas is going to, he's going to propose to her.
Yeah. Yeah. He must be getting it sized.
Yeah. So she kind of is looking for. No. She's using that ring as the basis of what size ring to get. And so she kind of freaks out. And then Jonas is like, Amy, do you want to marry me? I'm not asking you to marry me right now, but do you want to marry me? Because if you don't want to marry me, why am I uprooting my life and moving across the country, basically?
Yep.
And she was like, no, I guess I don't right now. She married her husband because she thought she had to, and she didn't want to marry someone because she thought she had to again, which I understand that. But they break up at the end.
Yeah, and not only do they break up, but Jonah reaches into his pocket and says, okay, well, here's your ring back. So he did actually have it.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did have it, and he, you know, so. It was still good. I enjoyed it. We had, you know, a lot of great comedy all throughout it, as I'm going to say as always, but as it has been.
Right. Glenn is going to step back in as manager.
Yep.
I'm trying to think if there were any other big Dina is trying to find a replacement best friend and basically tells Sandra that, you know, you might be it, but I've still got to interview other people. And basically everybody else is no, just no.
Yeah, Sandra's just happy to be thought of.
Yep. I like the arrangement that she comes to a Cheyenne where basically they eat lunch at opposite tables and give each other like a knowing nod. And they're both agreeing, like, yeah, that's really good. We can do that. Like, that's the extent of their friendship.
We can do together. Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely something we can do together.
Yep. But yeah, I don't think there were any other big high notes for that.
No, I don't think so either. I think that pretty much sums up the episode.
Yeah. So next time we should have just like regular shenanigans minus Amy's weird, crazy neuroticism.
Which honestly, I'm not upset about.
Me either. She was definitely the one that dragged down the last season, I feel.
Yeah, she definitely dragged down the last season for me. Not being rude about it. It was just a fact.
Yeah. No, we said it several times on the podcast. I remember like we would say, the show used to be good, but now that Amy has more presence and she's just really sucking the joy out of it by being so over the top, like 80s sitcom style neurotic.
Yeah. And I didn't really appreciate it.
Nope.
Quite frankly. Oh boy. Oh boy. All right. Queen's Gambit.
Yep, I watched two episodes of this show.
And what do you think?
I thought that I watched two episodes of this show.
So, it's exceptionally slow, is it not?
Yes, that is the exact way I would put it.
But, as slow as it is, I did enjoy the episodes.
Yes, yep, I can agree. It felt like I watched four episodes because it was so slow.
Yes. Yeah. Basically, it's about this young girl who is a chess prodigy. Her parents die. Her mother dies in a car crash. She's orphaned. She's sent to, like, you know, the old orphanage home in the 50s, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was in the 50s, mid-50s or late 50s. They give the kids tranquilizers, basically, to sedate them. And while on tranquilizers, it allows her to, like, see, somehow be able to see in her mind and project it on the ceiling, like the chessboard. And that's how she kind of taught herself to play chess and learns everything. And she plays chess with the janitor guy in the basement and basically becomes like a chess genius. And, but she's hooked on tranquilizers. So then the state decides they can't give kids tranquilizers anymore. So she's, you know, kind of gets off them the rough way. Episode two, we fast forward several years, and she's adopted by a family.
Hold on just a second. She gets off from the rough way because she takes the time to break into the room that they're kept in and shoves fistfuls of them into her face and then stuffs her pockets and then takes the entire jar and tries to escape with it. But because she stuffed fistfuls in her face, she collapses and they essentially have to pump her stomach.
Yeah, she has an overdose. Yeah, yeah.
So the second episode, sorry.
So after her overdose, she's prohibited from playing chess. She gets adopted by a family, a husband and wife who wanted an older child. She's actually 15, but the adoption agency tells them that she's 13.
Uh-huh.
They get home. The husband, Mr. Shabley, just says, I got to go to work. And he heads out to go to work. And we see him a couple more times. And then he basically calls and says, yeah, I'm not coming home. I'm leaving you. And the wife, Mrs. Wheatley, she's hooked on, Mr. Wheatley, Mrs. Wheatley. Mr. Shabley is the janitor that helped her.
Hmm.
She's taking, we find out she takes tranquilizers that she's prescribed to help with her tranquility, as she keeps saying. But essentially, when she tells Beth, my husband's left me, Beth's like, well, I guess you have to send me back because by law you have to. And she's like, well, not if we don't tell anyone my husband's not here, you can stay here. So Beth, of course, is down with that. Right. She gets $5 from the janitor of the orphanage. And she goes and enters this chess tournament that she wins, and she gets the $100 prize. She tells Mrs. Wheatley about it. She's excited as shit, and she's like, hey, let's go do this other chess tournament. That's kind of how the second one ends. They're going to go across, you know, travel to Chicago to do the second tournament, so, or Cincinnati, Ohio. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it was fun watching her beat those people in the tournament. It was a little predictable because, you know, it's about her and everything. But again, the aesthetic here is, like you said, the 50s, 60s era. So like everybody smokes everywhere. Everybody drinks black coffee.
Yep.
and essentially watching her beat these guys, like that last one there, that weasley faced guy. I've seen him in other stuff. He always looks like a weasel. You know, he basically lost because he decided to be cocky and show up late. And she even says that to him. She's like, he's like, no, I can still pull it back, pull out from behind. And she's like, yeah, maybe you could have if you showed up on time, but nope.
So as these episodes progress, I'm sure it's more about her playing chess, and as she grows older and becomes this chess grandmaster and yada, yada, yada. I mean, I'm going to continue watching it. I don't know if you're going to or not. I get it. It's not for everybody. But
I probably will until it's going to be one of those either it gets really bad or like I'm too busy. Those will be the two reasons. Yeah. I'm not going to stop watching it right now. Like, oh, this sucks. It doesn't suck. It is very slow. But it would either have to be like, yeah, this sucks now, or holy crap, I've just got too much to watch or too much stuff going on. And
Fargo, episode 7. A lot happens in this one. Again, I really I enjoy the show. I know it's not for everybody. I know you don't enjoy it, but I enjoy the hell out of it.
Which I'm glad for.
I'll just leave it at that.
Excellent.
I mean, if you like the previous seasons, you'll like this season. If you like a good crime show, you'll probably like this season. So.
Anything big or major that, you know, you think I would appreciate knowing based on?
Not really.
Okay.
You know, quite frankly, I mean, that nurse kills her new boss.
That's not surprising.
Making a bunch of macaroons for him, and he eats them, and they're poisoned, of course.
Of course.
You know, shit's going downhill between the two gangs. But yeah, no, I like it. That's all.
Thanks.
I like it. No sense deep diving into it.
All right.
Bly Manor.
Holy
crap. This was probably the best episode of the season.
Yeah, it was really well done. We got some answers, and I was like, I'll bet you Mike actually enjoyed this one.
Yeah, but I will say this.
Okay.
This by no means matches the level of, like, holy fuck, as the bent neck lady episode.
Right. I would agree with you on that one.
Yeah, by no means.
No, I agree with you on that one. It was really well done. Essentially, we get the housekeeper story, and it's told in a way that was really cool, because we're seeing these flashbacks and stuff, but it's almost as though she is in the present time experiencing these flashbacks. And so like a flashback will happen, and then suddenly you'll come to her like in a completely different scene. And she's, you know, she's gasping, or she's like, you know, jarred because of what she just saw and what she experienced. And even at one point, Owen's character like tells her, he's like, hey, we're doing it again. Remember, this is who you are. This is what year it is. This is the age of the kids. Remember that. Bring yourself back to this point. And so we get to see like how she's been around for all of this, watching basically, what's his name there? The shithead. I want to say Clive, but it's not.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Basically watching him go after the au pair, the teacher. And essentially, she's a good person. You know, she's been there. She's been taking care of the kids. And then we finally get to see a ghost kill him. Peter Quint, that's what it was.
Yes.
And we get to see one of the ghosts that the kids are actually like, you know, no, she, you can't bother her. You can't let her. And she's the lady of the lake. She has like, she has a face, but she like, she doesn't have eyes, like there's skin over her eyes and she doesn't really have lips. So it's almost like there's a plaster mold over her face. And,
but like you had said previously that like the kids were preventing, what's her name? The new nanny. Danny. They're preventing Danny from like being
Danny the nanny.
Yeah, because she walks a certain path to the house. And Peter ends up in that path. And that's how Peter dies.
Yeah, which they did it off screen. Basically, she grabs him by the face and just walks off one-handed, just walks off slowly around the corner. And then you hear him like, whoa! And then he walks back out from around the corner and starts talking to the kids again. And they're like, well, what happened? What did she do to you? And he's like, what are you talking about? And then she comes back out around the corner, dragging his body still. And now he realizes that he's a ghost. But
yeah, it's like Haunting of Hill House. When you die at this house, your spirit is trapped at that house.
Yep. And he's pissed because he's a ghost. He's trapped here, but he seems to be able to like physically manipulate some things. And also he can possess the kid.
Well, and that because he possesses the kid and kills Hannah.
Yeah.
Because we find out she's dead because the kid, you know, Miles pushed her in the well when Peter was possessing him.
Yep.
Right before Danny showed up. And so you see, and Peter unpossesses Miles, right? And but Hannah's spirit ghost is already staring at the top of the well looking down at her body. And Miles, oh my God, what happened? What's going on? And then we get the whole scene of them meeting Danny for the first time when the show started and on and on and on. So.
And for having just been murdered and turned into a ghost, Hannah is remarkably calm and composed and actually, like, just starts talking to Danny, you know, as we saw.
Yeah, it's kind of... And then, because the episode started with Owen, Hannah, and Jamie all, like, sitting around the fire.
And, which was from the episode before.
Yes. Sorry. And... Owen had like said to Hannah, like, you know, we should go to Paris or something like that. And then when it ends, Hannah kind of wakes up at the bonfire and she's like, tells Owen, like, yeah, I'll go with you. But Owen kind of doesn't hear her, or maybe we've missed something, but he's basically telling her goodbye. And her and Jamie kind of walk off together into the, you know, into the shadows, if you will. Well, Hannah's kind of calling out to them, but they don't. They don't wait for her. They don't stop walking. So it's almost like now they can't see her for some reason.
Right.
Because it seems like.
I got that impression as well.
Her days start over a lot. Like she just appears someplace and it's like, oh, I'm here now. Or.
So we now have an answer as to why Miles sometimes acts like a dick, because Peter is possessing him.
Yep.
We know that the Lady of the Lake is a ghost who can physically interact with people and flat out fucking murder them and drag their bodies to the bottom of the lake. If you die on the grounds, you are stuck there. And Hannah doesn't eat because Hannah is dead.
Yep, that is true.
So we got a lot of answers. And didn't you tell me that the next episode is part two of the one that we got part one of?
No. Oh, okay. Episode 7 is part 2.
Oh, okay. I thought we were up to 7 already. Damn.
No, but episode 6 is the next one.
Okay.
It's dragging like crazy.
It is. But again, after this episode, I feel better.
I did enjoy this episode. I felt a lot better about the show in general after watching this episode.
Yeah. I guess this might be a good argument for binging this show. You know, if we had binged it when it first came out, then we may have enjoyed it more because we could get right into it. We weren't putting a week between each episode to get frustrated. Maybe. Right.
Yeah. Soulmates.
Soulmates. You hated this episode, didn't you?
No, I didn't actually. I enjoyed this episode.
Okay.
Essentially, we meet a young girl at the beginning named Heather, and it's like we're watching her videos of her life, of her trips and adventures and all the fun she's having. And then we find out she's dead. And essentially, her soulmate, who he never met her ever, but this is his soulmate, and she died before they could meet in a car crash. And he's just horribly sad because he never got to meet his soulmate.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that he apparently tried to kill himself because his wrists are bandaged up. But he's in like a support group of other people who's all lost their soulmates without actually being with their soulmates, or they all lost their soulmates and they're sad.
Right.
And this main character we meet and a few others, they get suckered into essentially a cult where basically they're saying suicide's okay. It's okay to kill yourself to be with your soulmate. And.
But first, help us dig some holes and sign here and hand us all your savings.
Yeah. And the holes you're digging, that's where we're going to bury your corpses, because we're all going to pretend we're doing, because we're going to say we're going to do a big suicide together, but we're really not going to do a suicide together. Right. You guys are going to die. We're going to be fine because we're going to take all your money and leave your dead bodies here.
Yep.
So once again, this show gives us an episode where the premise of the show, hold on, I want to pull the premise up. I had it waiting here, and I switched off to go look up another thing. Soulmates are sent approximately 15 years in the future, where a company called Soul Connect has developed a test that can determine the person you're meant to be with, meant to love, with 100% accuracy. You know? They also tell you that your soulmate is the person you will love the most, more than anyone else. But.
Yeah. I really like.
Love them the most doesn't mean that true happiness is coming, or that this is the best person for you. And every episode so far has showed us that. It's like, don't meet your heroes, they'll disappoint you. Don't meet your soulmate, they'll disappoint you.
Right. And I really liked with this one how it kind of, again, each episode gives you a different take on the idea, you know, or a different twist. Like in this case, like you said, we start off by seeing this girl and she takes the test. She's like, oh, there's nobody in the system yet, so I'll just have to wait. And then we find out, that was one of the last things that she did because she died. And so she'll never get to know her soulmate. And now this guy is left with the crushing feeling of, I know who my soulmate is, the person I'm supposed to love most, and they're dead. So I will never get to experience anything like this. And, you know, where do you go from there? But you're right, because at its core, it's essentially another, it's another way of saying, don't have a soulmate. Don't think that you're only going to have one person. Don't rely on.
The grass isn't always greener.
Yep. Because basically him and Malin Ackerman form a friendship because she's at one of those meetings as well, because she has a similar situation, and then they have sex and she finds out that that was his first time. And so she feels guilty, but then they both end up in the cult together and they both end up doing the suicide thing together. And they come to realize, they're like, no, we could actually be good for each other. And so it's again, you know, like, look, they weren't soulmates, but they still are going to make a go of it and they still love each other. So, yeah, it definitely feels almost preachy to that point.
So one episode left, I think. I wonder if this episode will actually show us soulmates that met and love each other and are happy.
That'd be refreshing.
interesting how every other episode has done the opposite.
Yeah, it's kind of a, in some ways, it's a romance killer when you watch this show. You're like, Jesus, they're trying to tell you that romance is dead, or that, you know, it's not what you think and it's going to be somebody else.
So, Supernatural, episode 18. Got two episodes to go. When we last left off, you know, Jack had made himself a bomb, and then they wouldn't let him detonate himself and kill Chuck and Amara, and then Amara went into Chuck, and now Chuck disappears. And so Billy, Death, shows up and teleports Jack to the empty, where he does detonate. However, the empty can absorb the detonation, and Jack is apparently fine, and the empty is now mad because the empty, which is usually silent, is now very, very loud. Mm-hmm. And of course, Billy does a blackmail power play to get, you know, to get Jack back. And then the Winchesters decide to fight Billy, and they take her Sith, and they wound her on her arm. But apparently we find out that that's enough to kill her, and she's not going to recover. So Jack is now powerless. People from the apocalypse world begin to vanish. So,
which I missed that whole thing. I missed the whole apocalypse world storyline. Apparently,
it was basically alternate universe. There's alternate universes. Like, God made multiple universes. Our Earth is just one of many Earths. And the reason why God hasn't been around these episodes is because he's off destroying the other worlds he created.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how we got Billy and Charlie back because they're from, sorry, Bobby and Charlie back because they're from Apocalypse Worlds.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And that's how they brought back Michael the Archangel, who is Sam and Dean's half brother, is his host because he's from the Apocalypse World.
Okay.
And by the way, he's still out there somewhere. Like, we haven't seen him in these last episodes, he hasn't shown back up yet. So he's still the wild card that could be out there to help them kill God, essentially.
Huh.
So anyways, they head off and they're trying to protect the Apocalypse World people by bringing them to a silo that they've warded from Death. And they think Death is the one that Billy's the one that's doing this because that was Billy's plan. So Castiel and Dean go to Death's library and confront her. And that's when she says, I can't do that. I'm not doing that. Chuck's doing it. So as in God's making them disappear or vaporizing or dusting them. And it reveals her wound. And then she decides that the last thing she wants to do is see Dean Winchester dead. So they have a battle. And it's determined that the only way the empty can come to the plant, can come to Earth, is if summoned. When Castiel made his deal to get Jack out of the empty, he basically, once he reaches true happiness, the empty will be summoned. So Castiel does a nice romantic bromo about how much he loves Sam and Dean and how this he is happy and on and on and on. So, of course, the empty shows up just in time for Billy to kick the door in and grab Cass and grab Billy and suck them off to the empty. So now there's no more Death. Because the Grim Reaper, the Head Reaper, is gone. Castiel's character is gone. We find out that Chuck is making everyone disappear, not just the Apocalypse World people, because he also makes Donna disappear. And I really liked her character, and she's not from the Apocalypse World.
And, I only saw her briefly, but she did seem like a cool character.
Yeah, well, she was a local law enforcement officer at some town, and her character came up a lot. And she was just a fun. She was a lot like the cop from Fargo.
Was she one of two local law enforcement? Like, I feel like she was. I feel like I saw that. Like, she was introduced when I want to say Joni, but it wasn't Joni.
Yes, it was close to that name. I know who you're talking about. Yes, when
her
character Jody couldn't always be on every episode.
Yeah,
like they're friends and stuff. Like, so Jody basically, and Don are friends and work together.
Yes, and there was an episode where the two of them were working together, and that's how we got introduced to her.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I was still watching.
No. We met Donna another way, and then Jody and Donna met each other.
Okay.
And realized, oh, hey, so you're in on this too. And then they just became friends type of thing.
Gotcha. Okay.
But yeah, so she disappears. That kind of pisses me off. I almost feel like they jumped the shark. Like they made everyone disappear or everyone vanish, which means they're somehow going to make everyone come back. But basically.
Right. Oh, yeah, it definitely felt like that.
Yeah. So Sam and Jack were left by themselves at the silo, and Dean's by himself now in the bunker, and they're all sad and stuff. And that's how
Dean's
the episode
not answering his phone.
Yeah. We've only got two episodes left for the series. So,
yeah, I definitely foresee a Avengers Endgame kind of thing here where the other people all get blinked back, you know, like maybe Amara weasels her way out of Chuck and says, nope, I'm going to blink them back. And we get a little, you know, on your left kind of thing.
Yeah. I watched the ending of that movie the other day, literally from the point where Cap picks up
Mjolnir.
Mjolnir, thank you. Because that part just makes me mark out big time. And then I just watched through the end of the movie. Because that is just such like, it's an hour. But it's such a great hour of movie. I almost said television of cinema.
It was phenomenal. But I got to tell you, they did a one of those, like, you know how a lot of these shows are doing virtual table reads and stuff?
Yeah.
They got the original Avengers, you know, from the movie to do like a celebrity trivia contest thing. And one of the questions that was asked of them was, I think it was, who does Shuri hand the gauntlet off to when they're doing that big scene where all the, you know, the female characters are there and they're handing it off. Yeah. And apparently Scarlett Johansson was just like, I wouldn't know. I wasn't there. Ooh.
That's very true.
Yep.
That's very true, though. Yeah. Let's see. What else? This Is Us was not on this week because of the election.
Correct. Probably a good move on their part, although I really could have used some, you know, wholesome Pearson loving.
Yeah. I hear you. The Conners was excellent. I enjoy the hell out of that show.
I'm glad. It's continuing to bring you joy.
Yes. The only thing we have left to talk about is Utopia. Did you watch anything else?
We have two things to talk about. Utopia and The Mandalorian.
Oh, yeah, The Mandalorian. Sorry, but that comes at the end.
Right. I think as far as shows go, that's... I didn't watch anything else. I mean, other than, like I said, you know, a disgusting amount of election coverage.
Yeah, lots of election coverage. So, Utopia.
The final episodes.
If they come back for a second season, I'm not going to fucking watch it.
Yeah, I think I got the story out of it that I wanted, and I think that I'm all set now. Like, I don't think that I need to see anymore, even though they left it on a quote-unquote cliffhanger. Yeah.
You know, John Cusack character is the White Rabbit. He's a piece of shit. His plan this whole time is not to murder millions of people with this virus. The vaccine is not actually going to kill them. The vaccine is going to sterilize them. So that way we sterilize people so people can't reproduce for a few generations, and it allows the surplus population to weed itself out.
Yeah.
So yeah, kind of even more mastermindish than,
It was definitely a Bond villain kind of thing. And I get what he was saying. You know, he was very calm in his delivery of all of this because he's basically thinks that he's right. And I understand the logic behind it. If you remove the human element, then I understand the logic. He's basically saying at 7.5 billion people, and they projected that, you know, within another 10 years, we'll be up over 11 billion. We are not sustainable. Like, this planet is not sustainable. The resources, the atmosphere, etc. So he wanted to drop it back to a manageable, like, what did he say? Like 1.5 billion?
Something like that. Yeah.
And so again, I understand the logic. I get it. It doesn't it's still a shitty thing to do. You know, it's just not. You can't do that.
It's definitely a shitty thing to do.
Yeah, I did write down one of the lines on there. I kind of had to paraphrase it because I was so floored by it. But at one point, you know, during his little Bond villain speech, he's talking about it and he says something along the lines of, how much evil do you have to do before the good that you do is good? And Desmond's character there looks at him and he's like, none. The answer is none. None evil.
Yeah, it's true.
I love no evil. None evil. Evil.
Did you watch The Good Doctor when it came back at all?
Nope.
I didn't bother to either.
I looked on Hulu and I saw that, you know, my last episode watched was, I think, like 18 or something. And I was just like, you know, I'm all set. I don't need to check this out.
Yeah, I'm not going to bother to watch it. Well, we'll hold off on The Mandalorian.
Yes.
Do you have any new movies you watched?
I watched three.
All right, you watched
36?
One.
Oh, wow. Well, I rewatched Palm Springs. It was a fun little thing. You'll appreciate this. I went on a date last week with my new girlfriend, and she had never seen Palm Springs, and I love it. I mean, come on. Groundhog Day meets Andy Samberg. So what I did was we met up in Waterville and we were going to get some food. We had to change plans there, but basically we had like a little picnic down by the river, and then we got into the RAV, and I had downloaded it from Hulu onto my iPad, and we sat there in the back seat and watched it like we were watching at a drive-in. It was kind of nice. It was it was a cozy little drive-in for just the two of us.
That's awesome, dude. Sounds great.
But the movie is just great. I mean, she was laughing right from the get-go, which is always a good sign anyway, but the movie is just great. It's so nice. Like, it's funny when it needs to be funny, but it also has some really good messages. I know we've already talked about it before, but it's just, I love Palm Springs. It's definitely up there on my list of top movies.
What's the other movies you watched?
The other movies I didn't like as much. Basically, here's what happened. Amazon does these promos every now and then. Like right now, they're doing one where you click on this link and you make sure that you're all set. And then they're like, if you watch anything, then we'll give you a $5 credit on your account. Great. And then they also have another one that they partnered with Cheetos. And they're like, here's a list of movies and TV shows. And if sometime in this month, you can watch 5 hours or 10 hours or something of these particular things, then we'll give you like a $5 credit on your Amazon account and a $5 credit to buy Cheez-Its. And well,
when you see these, please tell me about them because I don't see that stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't know if you would care about it.
Oh yeah. I like doing stuff for free and getting free stuff out of it. Putting in minimal effort.
Yeah. If I, I'm pretty sure I'll find them tomorrow and send them over to you. So
yeah, because
as a result, though, I ended up watching. Go ahead.
Oh, so our Prime account is under my wife's name, and she doesn't probably look at those emails or look at that stuff.
A lot of times they're not even emails. They're just like you have to find them online or find them on an obscure page. So, and I happen to follow a lot of those. But I ended up watching two movies that the first one was What Men Want. And this was the Taraji P. Henson recent movie where it's kind of a gender swapped version of Mel Gibson's What Women, you know, basically goes to a bachelorette party, hits her head and wakes up and can hear men's thoughts. So she uses that to help her get ahead and help her make love to this guy that she likes and learn all these.
Yeah, I remember seeing trailers for that and stuff. Yeah,
it's not bad, but again, it's nothing you haven't seen before. It's very predictable. I mean, it's a middle of the road thing at best. I'm not going to give it a sell whatsoever. And then the other one was that new oddly animated Addams Family. It was okay. Like, I thought it was going to be a true origin story because it opens up with Gomez and Morticia getting married. And during the wedding ceremony, they're run out of town. Like, the villagers come and they run all of the Addams clan out of town. And this is before, you know, Wednesday or Pugsley or anything like that. So there's that. You get to see them, you know, escaping and trying to make a life for themselves in the most detestable, gross, corrupt place in the world. So, of course, you see the sign for New Jersey. And, you know, they're driving down the road and they hit an inmate from a loony bin nearby, an escaped inmate, and that's Lurch. So this is how they got Lurch. So I thought it was like a genuine origin story. But then right from there, once they meet the house and the house is like telling them to get out, it cuts to a montage of the credits. And then you see like pictures of the kids being born and being raised. And then they're like 13 years later. So now you're caught up to what you would normally watch for the Addams Family. And it was okay. It wasn't great. It was, I could have done without it.
Okay.
So what's the one movie you watched?
I really wanted to watch a movie last night, and I decided to watch the 2015 Fantastic Four. Because I hadn't seen it. Say again?
Fant Four Stick?
No, the 2015 Fantastic Four.
Well, no, you're talking the one that, the most recent one, right?
Yeah, that's why I said 2015.
Yeah, people called it Fant Four Stick because on the poster it said Fant and then the number four and then stick. So the number four was supposed to be the A.
Oh, yeah, no, on the Disney Plus it just says Fantastic Four.
Oh, gotcha.
With numerical four at the end of the word fantastic.
Gotcha.
So here's my thoughts on the movie. I'm just going to summarize. 5-year-old movie. I don't care if I give shit away. Okay. My thoughts on the movie are this. It's a good movie. If the Fantastic Four never existed in any other medium before, and it's the first time you've ever heard of them or seen anything about them and didn't know anything about their past or history or anything at all.
Yep.
Like, realistically, that's what it comes down to. If you're watching this because you're a huge fan of the Fantastic Four, you're going to be thoroughly fucking disappointed.
Uh-huh.
But if you're just watching a movie for the sake of watching a movie, and or if you had never heard of the Fantastic Four, never knew they were a comic book or had other movies or cartoons or anything of that nature, and you were watching this solely based on the fact that it was a comic book movie and you hear they're good and you don't read comic books or know anything about them, it's a decent film. They tell a good story. You know, they establish the characters from childhood, you know, how they all get together. You know, the research that they're doing, you know, why they decide to go on the trek themselves after the adult government's going to come take it over on them. The aftermath of, you know, when that goes wrong, the aftermath and the fallout from it. I mean, it's a good origin story that likes to erase the history of the fucking franchise. But again, if you never knew it existed, you'd go, wow, that's a really good movie. There's that.
Now, I'll ask you this because, so I have seen it as well. Now, a while back, I watched the Venom movie and I had a similar response to it that what you just said there, you know, that basically if you throw out all the Spider-Man stuff. However, my caveat that I added to that was that based on everything that we know technologically now, scientifically, et cetera, I could actually make an argument that this Venom does fit in a better way than the comic. I don't feel that way about this Fantastic Four. Think that you could look at this movie and make an argument that, you know, actually, if they wanted to make this open for the comic book, I don't think that it would work, and I don't think that you would still have a movie. You actually do have a coherent and
most of everything you said was just cut out for me, but the gist of what I got is that after the Venom movie, you felt the same way. However, you can make the argument that that Venom character can fit in the Marvel Universe. However, this Fantastic Four could not fit into the Marvel Universe, correct?
Correct.
Okay, that's what I thought you were saying. Yeah, no, yep. And I would agree with you on that, because I watched this Venom movie, and I felt the same way. I actually thought, hey, as a standalone movie, this was actually really good. And then I think you and I did discuss that they actually could make that work in the Marvel Universe.
Yes. Absolutely.
However, yeah, you're right. As far as this Fantastic Four, I'd have a hard time seeing how they could. Now, that being said, it's funny because I watched it on Disney Plus. It's in the Marvel Legacy section is what they call it. And they don't have all the other X-Men films or anything like that in there. So I'm curious as to why. Maybe they don't have all the rights back or the distribution rights. Like, I know why Muppets Take Manhattan and Muppets in Space aren't on Disney Plus. It's because TriStar owns the distribution rights to those films when they are distributed still. So I know why those aren't on Disney Plus, and maybe that's why those other X-Men movies aren't, or something of that nature. But I'm interested to see, you know, once the fucking world gets back to getting together there, if we're going to see a new Fantastic Four movie. Are we going to see a new take on that? I'll be curious to see.
Yeah, a lot of the speculation says that the Fantastic Four could be the best way to introduce mutants into the, you know, between Reed Richards, the Cosmic Radiation, Dr. Doom, Galactus, you know, this could be the best way to bring mutants into the world. I don't know. It's a bit of a stretch for me, but I get where people are coming from. I would like to see it. They are considered the first family of Marvel. I think they really are due a proper treatment.
Well, I know they were canceled in 2015. The comic book was, because Marvel couldn't get the rights back from the movies. So they canceled the comic. And then, of course, once they got the rights back, they re-released, they started a new volume in 2018. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It'll be interesting. I mean, it is hard when you have all these legacy franchises that Marvel has, like Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, X-Men, et cetera, et cetera. Same issue DC has with Spider-Man and Batman. It's like their origin stories in the comics compared to, you know, are outdated for where we are technological-wise and storytelling ability-wise. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Not every character, but a lot of the characters are. Like, Batman's character, his origin, you know, a guy whose parents are murdered and he seeks vengeance. That makes sense. Superman's from another planet. Okay, that's his origin story. You know what I mean? Spider-Man gets bit. Peter Parker gets bitten by a radioactive spider. Okay, that still holds up. Some of these other ones don't really hold up like they used to. And they do have to maybe tweak them a little bit, but you have to try and stay true to what it is, you know, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just babbling now, regardless.
Speaking of origins, I saw a thing the other day where somebody said, you know, the guy who killed Batman's parents actually saved so many lives, because by killing those two people, he created Batman.
That's true. There we go. There's an alt universe story for you. What if Batman's parents hadn't been killed?
Yeah. How bad would Gotham be now?
I don't really have any news, and I only have one trailer.
I've got news, and I've got four trailers. I sent you the Lego Star Wars Holiday Special trailer.
Oh, I thought I sent that to you.
Well, either way, we saw it.
Yeah, okay. That was the one trailer I thought I had. So, yeah, that was awesome.
It was. It looks goofy and ridiculous, and they're basically traveling through time to all the different movies and eras, which is great.
Yep. And it looks like they got all the actors to voice their characters.
For the most part.
Yep.
I don't think they could get a hold of Alec Guinness.
Well, you know what I'm talking about, guy. Come on.
But
no, it looks awesome.
It does. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm a little disappointed that it's coming out in November.
Well, it's not a Christmas special. It's a holiday special.
I know.
Holidays start in November.
It's coming out Life Day.
Well, dude, November 1st, Netflix put up a fucking half dozen of their version of a Hallmark Christmas movie.
Oh, I know. I've already got some of them on my list.
And me too, but I'm waiting till after Thanksgiving. And then Disney Plus put a shit. They put Prep and Landing 1 and 2 on there. I love those specials. They're so good. But they put a bunch of Christmas stuff up on Disney Plus as well that wasn't there before. So
I'll probably end up referencing this a few times because it is so new and weird. But that's one thing is like I'm watching these trailers now for these sappy romantic holiday movies. And in the past, I'd be like, all right, you know, my mom will like that or whatever. Now I'm actually sending the links to my girlfriend and being like, can we watch this together? And she's like, yes, I can't wait to watch that. So
yeah. At least she's saying that, not grow up, son.
Oh, no, dude. That's a whole other conversation. But yes, she's thrilled about this. Like we're making movie plans around romantic holiday movies. So
yeah, my wife and I are excited to watch them, but we have to get through Thanksgiving first. She's real big on that. And I'm fine with that. But my wife is excited to watch them because they're rated G, which means we can watch them in front of Wesley and we don't have to worry about anything.
Oh, yep. Yep.
You know,
So before we get into those, I sent you the teaser for that Walker Texas Ranger reboot.
Yep, that really doesn't tell you anything. So it's
nope. He's narrating. Yep. Yeah. But it's coming in like the beginning of 2021. So you'd think they'd have more of a trailer. But anyway. I sent you a trailer. I sent you a couple of them this evening, so I don't know if you got through both of them, but one of them is called Happiest Season.
On Hulu.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, I'll watch the hell out of it, but after Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Kristen Stewart is going to meet the family of her girlfriend, except for on the trip there. Now, this was a dick move. Like, as they're driving there, her girlfriend's like, oh, by the way, they don't know that I'm gay. And I'm not going to tell them. So we're basically going to pretend that you're what does she call her? Like orphan roommate.
Yeah. Like why her orphaned roommate?
Yeah. So it's one of those kind of fish out of water type things. I love that they got Daniel Levy to be her friend there. He is just great. I loved him in Schitt's Creek and he's just awesome. But yeah, it looks fun. It looks like a nice, enjoyable Christmas movie with some happy, fun twists.
Well, that comes out November 25th, so.
Okay, so that'll be after Thanksgiving. They're following the rules. And then the other one was, and I don't know if this is a TV series or if it's a movie, but it's Hulu has a remake of, or a modern take on The Hardy Boys.
Yeah, I think it's a TV series. And I kind of wish that they were older.
I do, too. This is very...
12 and 16 in this.
Yeah. And then it looks like all of their friends are right around like the 13, 14 year old age. So.
Yeah. So I just, okay. That's going to be a thing.
I don't think I'm going to watch it. It popped up. I shared it. That was the extent of my connection with it.
Yeah. I mean, if you think of the Hardy Boys debuted in, I looked it up because I was curious, 1927.
Wow.
That's when the first Hardy Boys books came out. So, I mean, the franchise has done well for itself.
Yeah, definitely. A couple quick news things. Nothing like really huge, but I wanted to throw them out there anyway. Castle Rock has been canceled. The Hulu series. Yeah. Dark Shadows reboot that they were going to be doing at the CW is now officially dead. They're not going to do it.
Doesn't surprise me.
Tenet is coming to Blu-ray December 15th, so we might actually finally get to see that thing and find out what it's all about.
I am interested in watching that. So
me too.
That's cool.
What was really cool is that apparently in that Blu-ray box set of the Friday the 13th movies, you do have Friday the 13th Part 2's gore cut.
Yes, I know. That's the only reason why I want the box set. I want to see that. I know the whole backstory behind that.
But apparently you can watch some of the clips. Like, I sent it to Petrie, and he's like, yeah, you go on YouTube and you can see one of the deaths, and it's just like right over the top. And so I'm sure that you can find them out there, but it is a cool idea, you know, that they had one cut that was so over the top, gory and bloody that they had to.
Well, yeah, see, they submitted it to the MPAA for a rating, and they got like an X or an NC-17. So then they cut it, but the only copy they had of the gore copy, as they call it, like the special effects guy had on VHS, and he just had it sitting in a box like in his attic. That's and he awesome. Was doing an interview for this DVD set. They were doing a new interview for him, and they talked about the gore cut and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I got that on VHS, I think. And he went and found it, and sure enough, he did. And so the guy that was doing the documentary for this Blu-ray set, he had his buddy go pick it up, and they didn't want to risk mailing it, so they drove hundreds of miles to go pick this up in person. And then they were so worried because it was on VHS, but what they didn't, because VHS tapes near the end were made very cheaply, and it, you know, because that's why they sold them for $3 a piece or whatever.
Yep. Yeah, there were like those giant bricks. They were just plastic.
Yeah. Whereas when VHSs first came out, they were heavy duty, made to last, and that's what this was. So
yeah, I mean, you could forget to murder somebody with them.
Yeah. So they have like a perfect crystal clear, you know, widescreen copy that's in excellent shape of this, you know, gore cut that they, you know, put on the DVD set. So I'm hoping that Shout Factory or Scream House or whatever, with a Scream Factory, releases that on its own down the line.
Right. That would be great.
Yeah. Because I would buy that, because I would love to have that Friday the 13th Blu-ray set. It's $130, but realistically, for $130, there's not enough extras that I care about. They don't have, you know, like, other than you have a cool box set of all the movies and you have a couple new documentaries.
Yep.
The big appeal for me is that gore cut of chapter two, of part two, which is actually the first time we see Jason, you know?
Right. In the sack. Not even the hockey mask, the sack.
Yeah, he doesn't get the hockey mask till 3. He's a living person until he's killed at the end of 4. Part 5, he's not even in. It's not even until part 6 when he becomes an undead killer when he's reanimated at the beginning of part 6. Like, people forget that.
I know.
So
people forget a lot of stuff. People forget that he wasn't even in the first one.
Yes. Yeah. And they go, well, he was at the end, but was he?
Yeah.
The Jason, as we know it, didn't appear until, well, the Jason, as we know him today, if you will, didn't appear until episode part 6.
Right.
Essentially. So anyhow, so that's cool. Yeah.
The Disney Plus is moving forward on their Boba Fett miniseries. And it's going to start shooting next week, actually, which is this week, I guess, because I wrote that down last week.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that it's going to be the what happened to get him out of the Sarlacc miniseries.
I bet you that is what it's going to be. I hope so.
This is a fun little fact. I don't watch Young Sheldon anymore. You know, it got a little annoying for me, so I just stopped watching it. But apparently on the most recent episode, because older Sheldon will narrate sometimes. He's the narrator of the show. And yeah. Apparently we learned that him and Amy had a baby boy, and they named it Leonard.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Apparently Sheldon wanted to name him Leonard Nimoy, but Amy vetoed that part. Leonard Nimoy Cooper. Disney has officially pushed Free Guy and Death on the Nile back out of 2020.
No surprise.
I think that they're still trying to see. I mean, I just saw an article today that said that AMC, Cinemagic type, those theaters, they just reported their third quarter bad, which, no surprise there either. So yeah. They said that they're going to have to sell off a lot of their stock in order to have cash for the next year. I feel really bad about this. I really miss going to the theaters.
Me too. But I'm not ready to do that yet.
No. Vince Vaughn says that Wedding Crashers 2 is actually in early production. everything that I've read from him is that he didn't want to do a sequel as a cash grab. So he didn't want to do it unless they had an actual legitimate story that they felt would continue on and build upon the first one. And I can really appreciate that. Vince Vaughn's a pretty good guy that way, I think. Like, most of his work that he is directly involved in goes under that. So, yeah. And I think that was it for my news.
Well, you know, I'll say this, because it's Maine, because it's November, we actually had unseasonably warm weather this past weekend. But,
oh my God.
You know, the drive-ins are coming to a close. You know, Pride's Corner, they did a showing 6th, 7th, and 8th. So up until yesterday, it's the 9th today, they, you know, they had a screening yesterday of Toy Story. Mm-hmm. And at 4:15. I asked, is this going to be the final weekend, when they first posted this, you know, talking about the, you know, this weekend, and they replied back, we will see, stay tuned. A couple other people said, geez, I hope not. I hope you go one more weekend. So they haven't posted anything yet about this coming weekend, but they could have one more screening, which would be the latest they've ever gone into the season. My recent knowledge, when I was talking to the guy last year, you made mention that they don't usually screen later than October, but if there's a demand for it, people want to show up, you know, it is what it is. I think the Bangor drive-in is still doing movies, I think, or at least they might have just had their last weekend. But regardless, the point I'm trying to get at, they've had all the drive-ins in Maine basically have had the best seasons that they've had kind of in years, you know?
Yeah. And I really hope that COVID ends. I really hope that we see an end to this so that we can go back to the regular theaters and that we can start getting movies produced again. But I also hope that the drive-ins can maintain this, you know, level of business. Yeah. I want them to stick around. I like having drive-ins as an option. Yes, I definitely went to drive-ins more this year than any other year. Because even when I had the option, it was usually like, it's so far out of the way. But when it's your only option, then, you know, you rethink that. I like having them around, and I don't know. I just hope that they really do continue that once the theaters open back up.
Well, it looks like Bangor Drive-In on the 14th is going to be showing Honest Thief, which is like the new Liam Neeson movie.
Oh, okay.
Where he's like wants to turn himself in, but the cops are crooked. And that's going to be a double feature with Gone Baby Gone.
Ew.
And then they're doing Toy Story and Guardians of the Galaxy on the other screen.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So That's all they've got so far. So they haven't gone, they haven't posted. So they're going through the 14th. So, you know, good on them.
Right.
I know Sacco's closed. I know the others are closed. I don't know if the one in Farmington is closed yet.
Oh, yeah. Because
they stopped showing movies for a few weekends in a row to do live outdoor concerts.
Mm-hmm.
Narrow gauge drive-in. Oh, yeah, no, they played The War with Grandpa this past weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
What a random thing to pick.
Yeah, it really is. But they're, you know, they're only doing $10 a carload.
So. That's a really good price.
Yeah, that is. It's a fair price, so.
So,
Mandalorian. All right. If you don't want to hear about the Mandalorian, we'll talk to you next week, or you'll listen to us talk next week, or you'll go watch it and then come back and listen to this. But either way, thanks. So this was pretty good, huh?
It was. It was also the first time that I have kind of wanted to cuff Baby Yoda.
Yeah, Baby Yoda kind of pissed me off. The child kind of pissed me off because he kept eating the eggs.
Yeah, like he was told not to. I mean, I get it, circle of life and everything, but
yeah,
this is her legacy. This is the last egg she'll ever produce. Her bloodline is going to die off, and he's just like, yummy. Even at the very end, the last scene, he sticks one in his mouth. Dick.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. The child was kind of a dick in this. So we pick up where it ended. He's on Tatooine. He gets attacked by some other bounty hunters who want the child. He, of course, fends them all off and kills the final one by trading the backpack, his jetpack for the child, and then firing the jetpack up into the sky, and the thing falls to its death. I mean, just, and then he looks at like the child and shrugs his shoulder. You know, Mando's like, eh, whatever.
Yep.
But yeah, this so he meets up.
It was a Monster of the Week episode. I'll just throw that out there.
Well, yeah, they all kind of feel like Monster of the Week episodes, but I don't care. I love them.
Apparently,
Carl Weathers is going to direct episode 4, this says.
Hmm.
So anyhow, yeah, he gets some information of where there's some Mandalorians on this, in this system on the moon Trask. But the only person that's going to guide him is this frog-like humanoid, if you will. And like she has a jar with her eggs in it that she has to get to her husband to fertilize. However, they have to go sub-light speed because the eggs will be destroyed otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're fragile. Yep. While they're flying along, some X-Wing fighters show up, and he doesn't have his beacon on, basically, and he's like, yeah, my ship's old, I don't need one. Well, you're doing Republic airspace, you know, in the new Republic airspace, you need it. So they want to ping him, and he, you know, tries to brush him off, and then eventually he does turn his thing on because they're going to bring him in. And then they switch to another channel, a secret talk, and then they activate their weapons, so we get like a car chase in space. Or space chase.
Yep.
And I always like those, don't you?
I do.
Yeah. They end up on an ice planet.
But not Hoth.
Huh? But not Hoth, you're right. So they're trying to fix the ship, and they see that the frog creatures run off, if you will, and they track her down to like this hot spring her and her eggs are soaking in. And while Mando is like putting the eggs back in the jar, being like, hey, we gotta go, you know, the child finds almost alien-esque like egg sacs on the ground. And he breaks one open, and it's like a spider creature inside that he eats. And then the others start to hatch open. And then now they're being basically attacked by various size spiders, from little tiny, tiny spiders to giant, gargantuan AT-AT size spiders, basically. There's one that's like that big or whatever. You there still?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here. I was just waiting.
Okay, sorry. No, I thought I heard it click off.
Nope.
What'd you think of the spiders? It was almost like we had like a horror episode.
It was. I don't know. This was a frustrating episode for me. A lot of it was almost a little too over the top. Like the damage that he had to his ship when he crashed down into that cave. Mm-hmm. At one point he's looking at it and it's like squirting that green fluid, just like, bleh, bleh, bleh. And he's just so calm, like, eh, whatever. Like, it just felt like this is irreparable damage, considering he doesn't have the stuff on the ship to fix a giant puncture in his hull.
Right.
Much less all of the systems that are now going haywire. And then we've got the spiders, like you said, where it's just this wave of spiders. Like, they are fucking everywhere, including that giant one that's like crashing down on him. And once again, it's almost unbelievable, like the damage on the ship. It's like, really? You're going to fight off this many spiders and survive somehow? Like, I don't know. I almost felt like a lot of this episode was just too unbelievable. The fact that they actually limped out afterwards and, you know, oh, we'll have to seal ourselves up in the cockpit because the rest of it can't be pressurized. Really? Can that even happen?
Yeah, I thought the ship, I hear where you're coming from. I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed the episode. You know, they had to run from the spiders. You know, they got in the ship. He burnt a bunch of them. They shot him up. You know, all of a sudden when it looked like all hope was gone, the X-Wings found them and they start blasting all the spiders. And basically they say, hey, you know, you have a warrant for your, you know, for your part in the prison break. However, we also see you apprehended everyone that broke out, and you also saved some, basically saved some of their buddies' lives in doing so. So we're just going to overlook this, but just turn your responder on so that way, you know, we're going to drop the arrest warrant, but leave your, you know, turn your responder on so that way if you get pinged, you get pinged, and that's the end of it type of thing. And Mando asks for their help in preparing the ship, and they just go, ha, sure, and they leave.
Yeah.
So I enjoy the story, but yeah, Razor Crest took way too much damage. Like an over-the-top, unbelievable amount of damage for that thing to even go back up into outer space somehow.
Yeah. It kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Again, yeah. I know that it's a fantasy show. I know that we suspend disbelief, but man, it kind of, like, that just bugged me. Like, especially watching it in the in space, like, limping along and seeing, like, air coming off of it. Just, yeah. I don't know.
It was a little much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a little much. I can get behind you on that. It was a little much.
Like, if they had crashed down and, like, one of his engines was damaged so he couldn't take off and he could repair that, I get that. But this was a giant hole in his hull. Like,
yeah.
Nothing. Anyway.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of damage. It was.
And then between that and Baby Yoda being a dick about the eggs, it just, the whole episode, I was like, wow, this was the first one that really, like, frustrated me in many ways.
Yeah, they really made him a dick, didn't they?
They did. And I know that there are plenty of people out there, like biologists, who will be like, well, this is what happens. But again, I don't think that it I don't think that it really is realistic for him to just be like, oh yeah, I'm going to keep stealing these eggs because I want to.
You know, like when Serenity took all that damage in Firefly, in the movie Serenity, if you will, when Serenity took all that damage it took in the battle with the Reavers and everything, that was a believable amount of damage for what they went through.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, you're right. The amount of damage that we saw on Razor's Crest was a little bit too much.
So
I still love the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this did not, like, this was not a turning point where I was like, fuck this show. It was very frustrating. So
I get that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for me then this week.
I think it's it for me as well.
Cool. Well, I'm on the Twitter. I'm Superstar Mel.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K.
And that's our show.
We'll talk to you later.